Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 63 for June 13th, 2008. Don't touch that button. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for Windows Weekly, episode 63, from his beautiful home in the luxurious suburb of Dedham, Massachusetts. Mr. Paul Thurrott joins us. I love to tease Paul.
We've only been talking for half an hour. You know, we just arbitrarily start recording right in the middle of it.
Yeah, for those who watch at home. And by the way, you can now watch the live home version of the show, which includes, an extra hour or so of extraneous chat. At twitlive.tv, we do the show Thursdays at, what is this, 2 p.m.?
I don't even know. 2 p.m. Eastern. Listen to me mocking the guy from CNET or Leo doing his Wednesday afternoon voice.
We do funny voices. Sometimes I'll wear a funny hat. And you can see video of Paul looking like he's underwater. It's really cool. That's at twitlive.tv. I'm sure most people know this by now, but what we've kind of done is I took the studio that where I record the podcast and the radio show and turn it into a live internet TV studio. So we have multiple cameras, we have lights, we have lower third graphics, all the silliest, stupidest stuff, and that way I can make a production out of it, and then you can watch this live.
The appearance of quality.
Only the appearance.
That we're shooting for.
Actually, at this point, we've got the appearance of a kind of third-rate community access channel.
Jeez.
But that's about all I can afford, to be honest with you.
Right. I think it looks great.
It's fun. You know, it's really fun to do. We really have a good time doing it. And, what we've been playing with different stuff. In fact, I have a program I want to mention as a pick. Later in the show, but we play with different stuff to make the production work. And one of the things I want to do, and maybe you and I can do this sometimes too, is take calls from viewers and so forth. And certainly you can see the chat room, so we can get comments from there. Yep. So it's kind of the idea is to make it more interactive. I mean, the difficulty with a recorded show is that there's not much interaction. And what's the point of the internet unless you have community and interaction and two-way conversation? So I want to do more of that.
You know, I'll be out there in 2 weeks. That might be a good time to do a live show.
I forgot. We're giving you wine. We're plying you with liquor.
Really?
Yes. So, I forgot. So in a couple of weeks, why don't you come? You'll sit in the chair. You'll be right here. It'll be,
still be nice.
It'll be like a second. If you want the special underwater look, I think I can do that. We can arrange that. We have the capability of, like an underwater camera, Paul. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Did my video just die because the light on the camera just went off?
No, you look good.
No, still going.
You look good. See, we can see you.
And stuff.
See you like that. I could just pinch your head like
I'm pinching your head.
I'm scratching.
God, I miss the kids in the hall.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's the potential here is it could be like the geeks in the hall. Sort of. In a way.
Daddy drinks. That's what I remember from that show. The girl running up the camera.
Let's talk about Windows. You were watching, I'm sure as everybody else was, Steve Note, we're calling it now, the WWDC keynote on Monday. Steve Jobs announcing the 3G iPhone. You're an iPhone user.
I am.
So were you, did this grab you?
I am. Yeah, I mean, I'm all over this. You know, I think the iPhone is the smartphone platform to worry about at this point, to think about, to use.
I agree.
There are problems with it. You know, just today I was posting about the issues with AT&T's networks and how they're actually even worse once you get to 3G because Edge is horrible, but at least you can usually find it, near where you are. AT&T's coverage of 3G is horrific.
Right.
It's in a couple of major cities. And
I wish more people had said that. Somebody came up to me at the gym and said, oh, I'm so excited. This guy I feel bad for. I've never owned a cell phone. I'm so excited because this 3G is real fast, isn't it? And I said, well, it would be if you were in New York, San Francisco, or Dallas.
If you live in New York City, San Francisco, you're all set.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. So that's the thing. I mean, you know, obviously I'll review the thing eventually, but I have to get it first and use it. So I can tell from AT&T's map, Dedham is not one of the towns on the list in Massachusetts. Right. I can tell you that. So, wow, that's neat, you know, but whatever, you know, 3G functionality obviously is a big deal.
I think in time they're going to make it everywhere. Yes.
Yeah. Obviously they're improving the network over time as well. And they've even improved their 3G coverage since last year. So I think this is an ongoing process that they're working on.
Clearly they need to do that. There is a coverage map, and this is what I told the guy at the gym. I said, either try before you buy, go to the AT&T store in our little town of Petaluma and try it and see if you get 3G, or, which is probably the best thing to do because the coverage maps, you know, can lie, or go to the AT&T site and look at the coverage map.
Sure.
It's a little hard to figure out. It says 3G mobile broadband coverage in select areas. and then you have
various
to go through.
Areas.
Yeah.
There are entire states where you can't get 3G from AT&T.
I believe Vermont, you can't get AT&T.
Yeah. Right.
So,
well, you can't really get it in my house either. So that's not surprising.
Do look at the map before you run out. On the other hand, you still have Wi-Fi, but I guess that's a really important point. I think the GPS is going to make a difference, don't you? I mean, I'm excited about that, although this is nothing new. Many phones have GPS built in.
No, I think honestly the big deal is the price, and there's been a lot of discussion, including on my blog, about whether or not this really represents a price cut, because when you factor in the $10 a month extra that AT&T is charging you over the course of a 2-year contract, it works out to be about $40 more expensive than it was last time. But, you know, that's not really how people think of spending money and so forth. The upfront cost is dramatically less, and that's what's going to put this over the edge
absolutely.
For most people.
Absolutely. There's a big difference in a $600 phone and a $200 phone.
Real world dollars. The cheapest iPhone plan you can get right now is actually almost exactly $70 a month after taxes and fees.
Right.
I know that because that's what I have, right? That's what I pay. So 10 bucks more a month, we're going to say $80 a month. That's expensive. It really is expensive.
But they do, what has changed, I mean, really, I think the relationship between Apple and AT&T has changed. And so now you pay $30 for the HSDPA, unless, of course, you don't get it in your neck of the woods. And then you can choose from any voice plan. So you really do have much more flexibility than you had before. Before, you had to get an iPhone plan.
Well, okay. So this is one of those things I've been trying to find out about. I had heard that cheaper phone plans would be available.
That's my understanding, is that any phone, but again, you know, it's very sketchy. Nobody really knows yet.
Yeah. And I heard also they were decoupling the SMS.
You don't get any SMS messages for your $30. None.
Right. So, you know, real world dollars, I think it's going to be a little more expensive or more expensive depending on how you look at it. I think that's okay though, because I think that the people who are on the fence were still looking at this thing and thinking, this is $400. You know, that's a lot of money.
It is.
The $200, it becomes doable.
Yep. No, I agree with you 100%. It's totally about the upfront cost. So let's see. One thing that struck me immediately is the when they're talking about MobileMe, they're saying, we bring exchange-like services to non-business customers. Clearly, exchange is a big thing for Apple. They're really paying attention to exchange.
They're sudden exchange devotees. But
isn't that funny? Does that seem odd?
It is funny. Yeah, I find that very interesting. They're putting it in the next version of the Mac OS.
Yeah,
as well. So,
they are. I didn't know that. So Snow Leopard will have exchange.
Will include exchange compatibility, I guess I'd say. Wow. Exchange.
And of course, they announced that they announced this in January, that iPhone 2.0 would support exchange and push style email and all that.
Although, by the way, the data plans and the rate plans for the enterprise customers who will use that functionality is actually even more expensive.
Well, of course,
than the plans we've been discussing. But
they did do something that has been available on other phones for a long time. They have kind of a business model that allows the company, BlackBerry's famous for this, allows the company to take the phone and completely customize it, turn things off, like the camera, for instance, and put business applications on the phone and deliver it to the user to your employee, at, you know, in a locked fashion that's the business's phone. I think that that's an interesting thing.
Yeah, I think they've there's been a lot of discussion about is Apple embracing the enterprise, and right. I don't think it's fair to say that they are. I think what Apple is doing is just enough to overcome whatever the hurdle is that these companies may have so that they can get their business, because Apple wants to sell iPhones. I don't think we're going to see a lot of, you know, enterprise support options and, you know, the types of things that Microsoft does with licensing and the volume of products that they ship for the enterprise. I don't think that's what's happening here. I think it's just about selling the iPhone. You know, even Snow Leopard compatibility with Exchange is really about bringing the same level of compatibility to those built-in applications in OS X that's already occurring on the iPhone. You know, that's all it is, right? So, you know, the Mail app will be able to handle Exchange Mail now.
Right.
It's what that means. And I don't think we should go too much further than that. I think that's the extent of it. And that's fine. I mean, that makes sense because I think a lot of people, these companies were really itching to get an iPhone. And obviously with the first version, there was no way for most of them to do it. And they've sort of removed those barriers. So that was smart.
Well, you observed in your blog post on the Supersite for Windows today mm-hmm. that the iPhone sales have been really tanking over the last few quarters.
Yeah, and I don't understand why no one else noticed this. I posted this with a bit of, you know, resistance. I was worried.
Why hasn't anybody said anything about this?
Well, you know, in other words, I'm going to put this up and someone will immediately come back and say, you idiot, this isn't true and here's why.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking I must be missing something.
Right, because you're right. You know, nobody's saying this.
Nobody reported this, but Steve Jobs came out. He had a big chart showing the big graph that was getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
And, you know, we've sold 6 million.
But it's totals. iPhones, it's not sales for the quarter. It's totals. It's a sum.
Million in total. So yeah. Wait a minute. You know, they announced that they sold 4 million at the end of 2007.
Yeah.
That's 2 million a quarter, roughly, in that year.
Right.
We know they sold 1.7 million in the first quarter. So that means for the second quarter of 2008, which... granted, is missing 2 weeks. But let's face it, there are no iPhones for sale. They're not selling anymore.
That's part of the problem, is that for a month, you couldn't buy one.
Okay. But they've only sold 300,000 of them.
It's a lot fewer, yeah.
Yeah, now there were people saying, well, back in the first quarter, it was a little low because people knew the new one was coming.
Right.
Oh, come on. That's maybe in your world, they knew it was coming. But in the world of cell phone buyers,
I have no idea.
You know, no one is hanging on the edge of the latest Apple rumors. You know, it just wasn't selling well.
Right.
And 300,000, I mean, you can say what you want, but that's, you know, they fell through the floor. So I think Apple knew this was coming. And a lot of the changes that they're making to the product, a lot of the countries that they're adding to the list where they're going to sell it, is all part of that effort to sell, you know, the 10 million units that they say they want to sell this year, because they've only sold 2 million so far.
Right.
And the year's half over. By the way, they're not going to have any problem. I turned my phone off in my office now, so it doesn't ring in here, which is wonderful.
Except.
I saw it light up.
Your answering machine will still go.
So I knew that the answering machine would kick.
Hi, Paul. This is your doctor. The test results are in.
Yes. You have a raging case of... Okay, that's enough. No, more likely it would be, this is the publishing company again.
Where's the book? We'd
really like you to finish the edits.
Do they send you... Now, my publishing company used to send... They'd send you the author proof. And then you're supposed to go through this with a fine tooth comb looking for errors. And I just go, and I throw it in a drawer and said, I'm sure the readers will let me know. I don't have
this. Well, so I.
This is how much a perfectionist I am.
There are two levels of editing. There's the, tech and whatever the other one is, a grammar edit type thing. Where,
proofing.
Where they send you back Word documents that are so heavily marked up you can't read anything.
Right, right.
So you go through that. And that's where I'm at now. And then the next step is they'll actually send page proofs. And at that point, I can't do things like add screenshots or add significant amounts of text. It's already been kind of laid out. So presumably when this whole process is done, Windows 7 will be out and then the book will finally ship.
Yeah, just in time for the obsolete operating system.
Yeah.
No, we don't have to worry about Windows 7. You got plenty of time, Paul. No hurry. This is the upgrade to Paul's Vista Secrets book, Wiley and Sons, and look for it sometime before the snows fall in Dedham.
Yeah. The book. Well, the delays are all my fault. So
we're not blaming them.
Yeah, don't blame them.
We know who to blame here, Mr. Thrun.
It's all me. But going back to, I just sort of finishing up the thought on the WWDC stuff. Mm-hmm. I think the iPhone is, aside from the AT&T stuff, I would just point out that I think it's pretty much a win-win at this point. If you were on the fence, this would be the time to look. Although, again, the AT&T thing, I don't know. That makes it tough. MobileMe, I don't know. I am a .Mac subscriber, so I was very interested during the MobileMe demo. He was showing off, you know, the web email client.
Yeah.
And he was things like the three features that he showed, which I can't remember any of off the top of my head. One was like quick reply. One was multi-select. And then one was drag and drop.
Right.
Those are all present today in .Mac. Those aren't new features.
Right.
And they got you know, applause from this audience who you think would know that.
Wait a minute. You got to understand, anybody to Steve note is his drinking a Kool-Aid. I mean, they're not, you know.
I found that to be interesting. So I know from trying to use .Mac on the Windows side, there's not a lot going on there. The webmail client isn't particularly good. So I'm a little nervous about that stuff. And I also know, just in looking at the list, if you go to look at their webpage where it says, you know, here's what MobileMe will be like on the Mac. It's this massive document. Right. And then here's what it'll be like on the PC. It's like a cue card.
But it's going to be the same. It says it's Internet Explorer compatible.
No. That's not what I'm talking about.
The syncing capability.
Well, no, I mean, there are certain features that work on both. So you're going to get push email, push contact, push calendaring. That's the core stuff that's big. You know, that alone should make you think about this. Although I would point out, I fully expect Google and other companies to come up with push support for their own products now that the iPhone is, you know, open. So
I have a calendar sync from Google on my BlackBerry right now that works really, really well.
Right. It's going to happen. Yeah. Now, once you get beyond the course, and then there's some, there's the gallery photo thing, which is sort of works on the PC if you have a web browser, because you can access it through the website.
Right.
But on the Mac side, you actually get a tremendous amount of functionality that doesn't make itself available on the Windows side, typically through iLife applications, or in some cases, they're just things that are specific to Leopard, like Back to My Mac. Mail notes sync, application and system preferences sync, bookmark syncing, over-the-air bookmark syncing, that is.
Right.
Dashboard widget preferences sync, dock item sync.
Well, yeah, but that's because it's all operating system specific.
I hear you. But how about things like website creation and publishing, right?
It's iWeb. They don't have iWeb for the PC.
Well, I understand that, but you still get this website as part of your MobileMe
subscription. So what would you do with it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no information about this at all.
Right.
The other thing is... I have to say,
in Apple's defense, they're still trying to sell Macs. I mean...
No. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, this is understandable. Apple makes products. They should make, you know, it should
work. Their stuff works a little bit better with their stuff. Yeah.
I'm just pointing it out because when you think about $99 a month, from the perspective of a Mac user, that's a little easier to swallow when you can do things like create an amazing looking website and upload movies from iMovie in various sizes that are perfect for the web, the iPhone, the iPod, or Apple TV. Windows users can't do that stuff. So is $99 a year for 20 gigabytes of storage and a subset of the functionality still worth it? I don't know. And this is one of those things.
I'd have to say, probably if I'm a Windows-only guy, no.
Right. Well, that's the point of this discussion.
Right.
I think that the push stuff is the core of what's available.
Right.
I sort of wish that was just available for much less money.
Right.
Especially for Windows users, because we're just not getting everything.
Right.
And it makes it, you know, less obvious of a choice.
I mean, I'm not surprised. And as a guy who's probably going to be using this mostly with a Mac, to me, frankly, I think this sets a bar for whether or not you have to buy .Mac. It sets a bar for a phone. I think from now on, people are going to expect over-the-air push syncing of address book. I mean, why should I have to connect a phone up via USB port or maybe Bluetooth if you're really modern and sync to get my contacts on here? It should be automatic. Same with a calendar.
Getting rid of the whole... tether effect is amazing. But again, like I said, I don't think that this is going to be unique to MobileMe. I think that Gmail will have this, Hotmail will have this.
This is the new standard. Yeah. And now it's going to be, if you don't do this, you know, you're not doing everything you ought to be doing.
Well, what I'm worried about is, you know, this ties into the cloud computing stuff. So there is an effort undergoing right now at various companies to move this cloud computing future. And here's what Apple's doing. So they have this cloud computing initiative now through MobileMe. They very specifically use the phrase cloud computing, cloud. Mm-hmm. You know, they were really pushing the notion this is cloud computing. But what if you've, like me, I've settled on Google, maybe you go with Microsoft stuff, whatever it is. I mean, if you get too excited about this stuff up front and you make the switch and you go to the effort of getting over your email over somehow to MobileMe, however that would work. No one's ever said anything about that either, by the way. You know, you change your calendar over, you move all your contacts over. And then the next day Google comes out and says, oh, by the way, we have push everything now and it's free.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So you want to be careful about getting too excited about this stuff, because I think for the short term, we need to just keep our eyes open and see what happens.
.Mac has always been overpriced, underperforming. It's great that they've added some features to it. I think it's still a question mark, even for Apple users, whether it's a worthwhile purchase. And I agree with you, for a Windows user, even an iPhone 2 user, it's probably...
It's a tough sell. Watching the keynote, I got... Initially, it's, you know, when you love technology, you get excited about this
stuff.
That's
the Steve effect. Yeah. The reality distortion of feel. Yeah.
You need to really think about it for a second. Because this... I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, compare this to, say, the Palm Centro. $99.
Yep.
I think this is the best, you know... I have had a 700, and I've had every Palm that ever came out, but I think this is the best Palm phone yet. I just think the Centro is adorable. It's cute. It's very functional, and it's $99 bucks.
I'm thinking about getting my wife on the Centro, because they're coming to Verizon this week, and that's what she has. And the only issue there, I guess, would be obviously you'd need a data plan to take advantage of the email, all that stuff. But right now she's on the low ball.
Right.
Whatever plan.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you kind of have to root for Palm. It's hard not to. I mean, they've been stuck in the sand for so long with regards to their operating system and how little they've done to improve it, you know. But yeah, the Palm Centro is a cute little device. Mm-hmm. It provides, I think, what basically everyone is looking for, you know, in the sense that an iPhone is a Lamborghini. You know, the Palm Centro is like the Volkswagen Bug. Or
yeah, but let me tell you something. My kid, for instance, says, oh, I want an iPhone now. He's a skater. I tell him, Henry, that thing on the front, that's glass. The first time you land on it, I'd much rather get him a Centro. And I am going to get a Centro for Jennifer, because we do have Verizon. I mean, I have every carrier, but the family plan is, Verizon. And I think the Centro for $99 gives you 99% of everything you want to do. It's not the BlackBerry Bold. It's not the Curve. It's not the iPhone. But for most users, I think the Centro is a great solution.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. Moving right along, I love this. And you quote this in your Windows IT Pro story. Analysts say Vista negativity will hurt Microsoft.
Right.
What are they talking about?
Basically, some analysts have reduced their revenue and earnings expectations for Microsoft over the next two fiscal years because of the negative reaction to Windows Vista. And what this means to me is
merited or unmerited, and we talk about this all the time, you think it's an unmerited negative reaction.
I think it's perception over reality, is what I think it is, yeah. And by the way, talk about the lone voice in the wilderness. I'm virtually the only person on Earth outside of Microsoft who thinks that. But that tells you the depth to which...
People have bought into this.
Yes. I mean, it's amazing. And I mentioned this in the article today. And it's true enough. I mean, someone called me the other day and said, hey, I got to buy my wife a laptop. Her company's giving her $1,200 to spend. You know, what did you think? And, you know, what do you think about this and this? And he says, how do I avoid Windows Vista? I've heard it's a real dog.
Oh.
You know, and it's just amazing to me how effective this stuff has been. It's been a combination, I think, of the switcher ads, you know, the tech pundit types and bloggers who stopped looking at Vista a year ago, but, you know, their stuff is still out there complaining about it from when it came out. And this stuff just adds up to a crescendo of complaints about how awful this thing supposedly is.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. I use this thing on a variety of machines. There's nothing wrong with it. In fact, there are many things very right with it. As I noted in my pseudo review of Windows XP Service Pack 3, you know, the hardest thing going back and looking at XP again for me is not being able to use a lot of the stuff that's in Vista. I just miss that stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't. You know, it's funny. At this point, I'm Vista's our standard install and everything I do. And you're exactly right. I mean, it's not that there's anything wrong with it. No. And once you get used to it, why would you use XP? And we're learning from security experts, as I mentioned last week, that this user access control is very effective, even against rootkits. Sure. It's more secure. It's safer.
It goes on and on and on. So
how much is it going to hurt them? How much do people think it's going to hurt Microsoft? This perception, this false perception that Vista is something's wrong.
It's not a huge amount of money. We're talking tens of millions of dollars in lowered expectation. Over 2 years, they do believe that once fiscal year 2010 hits, right around the time Windows 7 comes out, that Microsoft will actually rebound, and also that their long-term, play is still fine. They're a big company; they make a lot of money. They're positioned to handle the competition. Everything's fine. Right. It's okay.
How much of this, Paul, do you think is not anti-Vista, but just kind of residual Microsoft resentment, anti-Microsoft?
Now, I don't think of it like that. I think of it more like it's a perfect storm of timing and perception.
Yeah.
Because we're also in the middle of an economic downturn, right? So when you talk about business customers and the slow way at which they upgrade anyway, any hint, any scent of problem is all they need to go running back into their hole. And not no, seriously, like, we'll stretch it out. We'll make these machines last another year.
Right.
We don't spend money.
But business doesn't need. And I'll be honest with you. I don't think for business there's a compelling reason to upgrade. Is there?
Well, it depends. And this is one of those things that Microsoft has had a tough time communicating. You know, there are very serious advantages to Vista in specific cases. I'd say across the board, the security thing is a big deal.
Right.
Very specifically, if you have anyone who's traveling and you want to put Vista on a laptop versus XP on a laptop is a hugely different experience. There's BitLocker, full drive encryption. You can ensure that that data is not stolen if the hard drive or the machine is stolen, et cetera. There's a lot of advantage to Vista in that sense. There are sort of total cost of ownership advantages to Vista related to search and productivity enhancements and so forth. There's lots of facts and figures. Microsoft has put white papers out and so forth, but they've been so meek in their communication along these lines that I think that's the real problem. And I think we talked about this. You know, Apple is very aggressive. They've certainly won the perception war.
Right.
I think Microsoft should be as aggressive. And I've always said that. I've been saying this for years. These keynote addresses, you know, Bill Gates, comes out in a sweater and bores everyone to sleep. This is something they really need to work on. It's a big problem.
We should do a Bill Gates countdown. So let's see. Bill Gates, day 17, T minus 17, retirement minus 17.
Well, you know, one thing that would be really funny for someone to do would be a mocking video where it would be Bill Gates delivering a Steve Jobs keynote.
What do you mean? How would you do that?
How he could just bore the heck out of anybody, no matter how exciting.
Yeah. I don't know. Would you put him in a black turtleneck, black jeans?
Absolutely. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
And he could say, now, one more thing. We have
and one more thing.
One more thing. Release candidate one of actually.
Yeah, exactly. SharePoint Communication Services.
Partly that's not Bill's fault. I mean, we mentioned this before. It's a business community he's talking to. That's his audience. See, they don't want Flash.
He's been keynoting CES for a while.
Well, that's true. They should keep him. It doesn't matter. He's gone in 17 days. Yeah. So. Who do you have give the speeches at Microsoft? By the way, is it Ballmer? Is he doing the keynotes from now on?
I don't know. And I don't think so, because he is very clearly the businessman. You know, that's his persona. You want someone up there who can talk about vision. They don't really have anyone like that anymore. For a little while, they had Hillel Cooperman, who was doing some of the user experience work. I thought he was very dynamic and very interesting. Upper echelon, it's hard to say. I mean, obviously, Ray Ozzie is a choice. He's okay. But they really need people who can. What they should be doing is hiring people to be basically activists, who have good personalities, who can really sell what they're doing to people that care about technology. You know, they don't really, they don't really
do have any. Ozzy might be good. I think Ozzy could be actually a good choice. Don't you, I haven't seen him speak, but certainly he's got a dynamic vision.
He's okay. He's not, I wouldn't say he's great. He's better than Gates. Not that that's
Ballmer's the wrong guy. Cause you don't know, you know, he could go off at any time.
But in some ways that makes him the right guy. I think he's the wrong guy because he just, I don't know that he knows enough about the products. I mean, I think he's more about the business, you know, than he is about the technical vision.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer for Microsoft.
There is nobody. Mary Jo Foley should do it.
Sure.
Yeah, why not? Let's move on to item number three, Windows Home Server. PP1 Beta is out. I'm sorry. Windows Home Server, the PP1 Beta is now out.
It's a...
What is PP1?
Cultural bullyabage.
What is PP1?
Now you sell it.
Cultural bullyabage.
Power Pack.
Power Pack 1.
Power Pack 1.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that last week. What am I saying? Of course,
It's like a feature pack.
Yeah.
Of sorts. So
what's in it?
It's a release candidate, not a beta. Sorry about that. It's basically an update. It's a pretty major update. It fixes that data corruption bug, for example, the infamous data corruption bug. But it comes with two big features, one which I've tested so far and one which I'm going to actually test right after we're done with this. The one that I've tested is it now works with X64 Vista clients. So if you have Windows Vista X, you know, a 64-bit version of Windows Vista, you can now be a client on the Windows Home Server. You can install the client software, the client connector software. You can access the user interface remotely and so forth. You know, back up that computer to the server, all the things that used to be available just to 32-bit clients.
Mm-hmm.
The second major feature is that you can now back up the server.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have content stored on the server.
Oh, that's important. You couldn't do that before?
No, not directly through the product.
I guess the theory is the server is the backup. So
and they do that data replication over multiple drives so that if one drive fails, you know, your stuff is in one place. But that's good and certainly a worthwhile feature. But what it doesn't address is the notion of offsite backups.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I've been doing and will continue to do is I back up my photo collection from the server to the Amazon S3 service using a Windows Home Server plugin. What I will be testing today is I have what I used to use for backups on my old Windows server-based server, which are these 2 terabyte FireWire disks from Lacy.
Right.
And I assume this thing has FireWire. I'm not even positive about that. Assuming it has FireWire, I will try to use these terabyte big disks to back up the server. And the way it works is when you plug it in now, when you plug in any drive now, the server will prompt you and say, do you want to use this hard drive as part of the server storage, or do you want to use it for backup? And so if you choose backup, it will give you the opportunity to back everything up to the server, to the external hard
drive. So what is this program you're using that works with Jungle or the S3? I like that.
It is Jungle Disk.
It is so it's a Jungle Disk plugin for Windows Home Server.
Yep. Yeah, they have the application out separately just for Windows users in general. So, but they made a version specifically for Windows Home Server.
That's cool. I use Jungle Disk myself, and I think it's really neat because it mounts S3 as a drive. So does it, and it has backup built in, right? So that you could just use it to do the backup automatically.
I'm using it specifically only for backup to S3. That's all it does. And
great idea.
I don't interact with it in any way. It happens every night. If I'm ever in the console, I'll always click over to that tab just to make sure there were no error messages in there. There never are.
Right.
And then once a month, I get my little $5 or $6 bill from Amazon.
That's what I love. It's so cheap, you know.
It's so cheap, and plus that lets me know it's happening, right? Because that bill is for data transfer, you know. So I think the first month,
well, there's storage too, though, right? There's a storage bill and there's a data transfer bill.
Yeah, I mean
but you can see how much of each you've done.
See what it is. I'm not sure, but the big bill was up front. Was getting it there was the big bill. And when I say big bill, I mean $37 or something.
Because you uploaded a whole bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah,
The storage is cheap. My bill is $1 a month.
Yeah,
I love it. I love S3.
That's neat. I mean, that's what you want. You want it out of. You just want it offsite.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So this PP1 for a home server will be out. Well, I guess we don't know. It's just a release candidate.
I think by the end of the summer, it's not going to be too much longer. I think this is just they've been testing this for a long time, especially because of the data corruption bug. And I think they want to get it out now to people's hands.
Right.
And, you know, make sure there are no lingering issues, because obviously with anything like this, anytime you can get it out to a much wider crowd of people, things will start cropping up that maybe you didn't see in the lab.
Right.
So I think this is the final big test, and assuming everything goes according to plan, I would expect a couple of months maybe.
How are the security issues? Have they all been resolved? And not just security, but data integrity issues.
Yeah, no, that's all fixed in here.
Good.
In this release, yeah.
Excellent. So any other news items you'd like to cover?
Yeah, I didn't want to spend too much time in any of this stuff, but I felt...
All right.
Yeah, I should throw some of these out. You know, for example, this week, of course, was WWDC, but it was also TechEd IT, you know, Microsoft's humongous trade show for IT professionals. But comparing and contrasting these shows is hilarious, because WWDC is lots of news, lots of excitement, lots of talk. TechEd is dynamic IT and virtualization and system center, something.
But it's comparing TechEd IT to the WWDC is not fair. How about the TechEd developers? Was that more dynamic and fun?
Yeah, that was way better. Yeah.
That's more apples and apples.
IT,
come on.
Yeah. Moving right along.
We need IT. We need it. We love you guys.
See, I'm not sure we do, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
We had talked about the Does IT Matter stuff, I think, last week or before, and I got a few emails, including someone from one of the companies I mentioned who said, actually, that's exactly what we're doing, which I thought was interesting. But you're going to get people on either side of the fence. No one is, no one is straddling the middle ground on this one. You are either absolutely correct and this is the future, or you're an idiot and you must be stopped. And it's really interesting how people, fall out when it comes to this conversation. But it seemed like a lot of people were on the, IT is changing, and it doesn't really make sense for companies to do this stuff in-house. I mean, you can get rid of a lot of complexity and cost by outsourcing. It just makes sense.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe that's part of the reason why TechEd isn't really all that dynamic, I don't know. Anyway, so there's other stuff going on. I found some interesting comments from EU Commissioner Neelie Kroes, who basically came out and said, I don't care if Microsoft opens up OpenXML. I don't think anyone should use it. You should look at some other alternatives instead.
And why was that?
Because she hates Microsoft.
This is what we were talking about the other day, where there's just the open source community just hates them and doesn't matter if they
This is the woman who's in charge of...
Oh, this is the EU commissioner. That's right.
European commissioner.
Goodness.
That's a little dicey. This reminds me I don't expect it to have the same impact, but this in many ways was like when the judge from the U.S. antitrust case that Microsoft went through spoke publicly to a reporter and expressed his hatred of the company. And he just said, look, these guys are scumbags and they need to be stopped and I'm the guy to do it. And, her coming out and saying something like this, I can't imagine what she was thinking, why she would do such a thing. And yet it didn't really get it didn't generate a lot of news for some reason. I found her comments to be very disturbing and not what you want to see.
It seems a little biased, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's way too partisan for someone who supposedly is looking out for competition. Not just for Microsoft's competition, which is how I sort of feel they were acting. But I found that to be bizarre, but, whatever. Not a big story. Intel is under investigation by the FTC. They're also under investigation virtually everywhere in the world for antitrust violations. All of these were brought about the same way. AMD complained that Intel has reached illegal and exclusive deals with PC makers to exclude AMD. I have a hard time believing that that's not true, but, I guess we'll just see what happens. But AMD has been pleading with the FTC for years to investigate Intel.
Right.
And they've only had a very minor investigation until recently, and now they've announced a formal investigation. And perhaps later in the year, it could result in a Microsoft-style antitrust case. Who knows?
So that's finally moving along. Yeah, it's really bugged AMD that nobody has believed them. And... paid any attention
to this. They've had some success overseas Yeah, but in not the U.S., here.
Yeah,
it's been like crickets chirping.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey,
nobody wants to listen to it.
Intel's our big success story. It's like Microsoft. We're reluctant to mess with that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is news in the micro, or maybe news later today. We're recording this on Thursday, so you may hear something about this tomorrow or late today. And so okay. If we sound out of touch, it's just because of when we're recording this. But it looks like
we're old
and out of touch. But it looks like, according to the Wall Street Journal, Yahoo's about to announce a search deal with Google, maybe even letting Google do all the Yahoo search. Or
you know, yikes.
Something's going on there.
I can't even begin to express what a mistake that is.
It's a poison pill, though. I mean, it's really, they're fighting Carl Icahn right at this point, right?
Sure.
They're doing whatever they can to this, because I wonder if there'll be some shareholder suits coming out of this, because it's so clear.
Oh, there already are.
Yeah.
They are.
Yahoo's board and management is so, they have this same, you know, the theme of the day, by the way, is this kind of antipathy to Microsoft, whether justified or not, that people just everywhere seem to feel. Mm-hmm. And this is another one where Jerry Yang says, I'm over my dead body.
Right. He doesn't strike me as a very dynamic or, you know, good leader for Yahoo, by the way. But
well, and that's where you get the Carl Icahns who are saying, come on, guys. This
Carl Icahn's classic, though. You got to come on. This guy's like this media friendly James Bond villain guy. You can almost picture him like, you know, curling his mustache.
Yes.
<You know?
laughs>
I will take over the Yahoo board for $1 million.
He is a corporation's worst nightmare. You know, he's a billionaire with nothing to do.
Yeah.
And he loves to make noise and he loves to make news. And he'll just hold you to the grindstone. You know, he's classic. And every day is a different back and forth in this Yahoo thing. You know, he refuses to let this thing get out of the news. It's hilarious. Yeah. And I have to say, if a company ever needed to be prodded, it's certainly Yahoo. They need to do something.
So this is according to TechCrunch, and I say that with a grain of salt because TechCrunch has gotten some of these big stories absolutely wrong many times. But in this case, it says, TechCrunch says this afternoon, which is Thursday afternoon before this show comes out, Yahoo and Google are expected to make a joint announcement, likely to be a search partnership between the two companies that outsources all or part of Yahoo search marketing. And possibly, and this would be the big one, search itself to Google.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be a shocker. But again, that's just a rumor.
If the United States doesn't immediately launch an antitrust investigation.
No kidding.
Something is screwy is going on here.
I mean, there's the two big, you know, I don't know what part percentage of the market combined Yahoo Google would own, but it's a big percent.
70 something percent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge.
This would be like Ford has announced today that we're going to outsource all of our vehicle production to GM.
Right.
We don't, antitrust, you know, what's the problem?
Right.
They're American.
I guess my question is, well, yeah. I mean, now, is it worse than a Yahoo-Microsoft merger would have been?
Way worse.
Why?
Way worse. Because the combination of Yahoo and Microsoft in the search market creates a number two player that is still only, I don't know, 60% or less the size of Google, and still, at that point, doesn't make as much per search or per click or however you measure this as Google does. Not even close. You know, Google is the dominant player in this market by far. You could combine everyone else in this market. Google still owns over 60% of the search market, probably more.
Right.
So, no, it's a much different thing.
It's not. So, it's not the scary thing would be the search, not the online marketing and the online ad stuff. It would be the search.
Well, search is what, you know, it drives that stuff. You know, Google talked about, you know, the other markets that Microsoft, Yahoo combined would dominate, but they don't make any money.
Right.
You know, Google and Microsoft would own, 70 or 80% of all, you know, web mail. Yeah, all free webmail. You know, who cares? It's a loss leader.
Right. It would be a big stake, but exactly. What does that change in any way?
Google generates, you know, billions and billions of dollars a quarter now off of, indirectly from searching.
Right.
That's where the money is. That's the market. That's what you have to be concerned about from an antitrust perspective. And that's the one thing that they're outsourcing to Google.
So let's talk about Firefox. Do we have a date now?
Yes, we do. Tuesday, June 17.
Wow, that's sooner than
I wish I'd gotten this earlier. I might have considered it. I got an invitation to go to whatever, you know, they're having a day, like a Firefox day or something, where they're going to count down, you know, to the release and hope to set the Guinness Book of World Record for you know, most software downloads in 24 hours.
Over the entire globe or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of
cool.
Fun.
I like stuff like
Yeah, me too. I'm a sucker for big splashy and you know, it's smart because it gets
you're close. You could do it. It's in Mountain View, so you might consider going down there. It's
for a party?
Sure.
Are they gonna have a party?
They're gonna have hats and cake and
we should cover it. It's June 17th. We should absolutely cover it. We'll figure out if there's somebody down there.
I think it's a big deal. Firefox is big stuff.
I'm loving Firefox 3.
Yeah.
As much as I hated Firefox 2, I'm loving Firefox 3.
I mean, I've used every version of Firefox as my primary browser. I've been using this thing since it was called Phoenix, and I love it. You know, it's a big enough product. And in my mind, you know, Firefox is really up there kind of with Windows and with the iPhone. You know, it's an important product because, you know, it's the gateway to this cloud computing stuff we've been talking about. For me, it is anyway. And it's very important, you know. And I have issues with it, of course. I mean, I'm a reviewer, which is a way of saying I'm a critic or a complainer. But yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. I mean, I just love it. So
the place to go to find out more about this whole Spread Firefox thing is spreadfirefox.com. And then what they're doing right now is they're taking pledges from people don't download it now. We're going to take your pledge. And sure. and then
operators are standing by.
I pledge to get Firefox 3 during download day to set the Guinness World Record for most software downloaded in 24 hours. And they want to do this June 17th. And they from the U.S., 183,289 pledges. Canada, 31,000.
Canada.
Oh, you know, 128 from Greenland. Greenland, you've really got to get on the ball here.
That's everybody in Greenland, I think.
Well, that's true. Australia, 18,362. Yeah. Brazil, 75,399. So Russia, 29,000. China, 17,000. Now, see, this could all be turned around if everybody in China would just download it at the same time.
China, even though it's free, they'll try to find a pirated version.
How can we pirate? Let's pirate.
We refuse to download it from the real place. We're gonna buy it on the streets of Beijing.
Let's pirate Firefox
for 2 cents. But, you know, it just runs against the grain of the whole society.
So they're encouraging people also to have Firefox 3 parties.
Sure.
I don't know what kind of party that sounds
you
like.
Dress up in a, you dress up in a fox outfit and you run around your neighborhood.
That sounds awfully nerdy to me.
It is nerdy. That's the point.
We are nerds.
I am fully behind this. I'm going to look around. There must be something in Cambridge here or something I could go to that would be really lame.
If there is, will you call in? We'll do what day of the week is that?
I think it's a Tuesday.
Yeah. So we'll be monitoring that all day on Twit Live. This is what Twit Live was made for, is things like that. We'll have I'll wear a fox head.
That's right there.
Or this is a tail. This is what Twit Live was made for.
You need to reevaluate your entire life. That is the most.
That's pathetic, no, isn't it? No, I think this would be fun.
This is like stand in line to get a new version of Mac OS X or something. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. There's no harm in it. It's free. And doesn't ever, you know, I look at my server logs. It's something like 80% Firefox. I mean, it's a huge majority Firefox.
It's good stuff.
I'm going to wear let's get I need a fox contest, a costume or something.
There you go.
I'm going to do something for that.
Even one of those hats, you know, that would have like the fox ears on it or something.
Yeah. And I'll wear it all day.
Yeah.
And if you go somewhere in Cambridge for this, Don't bring this camera.
I see.
Bring a camera that works on a laptop, and you can call us from there, and we'll get a report. And now, live from Harvard Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Paul Thurrott. Paul, what's the scene there? It's going crazy, Leo. There's people all over downloading Firefox.
Well, I'm actually going to do the voice of that guy from CNET.
Oh, yeah.
The XPS 1530 has all of the accoutrements one's expecting.
Leo, I'm standing here in Harvard Square in downtown Cambridge, Massachusetts, and the scene is unheard of.
And then you always have to, if you're gonna do a bad TV field report, you always have to end with, Well, only time will tell. You know, that's just like,
right.
Will Firefox break the record? Only time will tell. Back to you, Leo.
I did a blog post. Any thoughts?
Any Let me thoughts? Know what you think. I like that. Any thoughts? Geez,
talk about mailing it in.
I don't have an opinion.
A link to something that I didn't write, and I'm going to ask you to talk about it.
What do you think?
God, do I even get out of bed for this? Or?
We'll do something. Spreadfirefox.com. I like it. And I can get behind Firefox. I think, you know, on the screensavers, we were big proponents of getting people. This was back when IE was, you know, actively dangerous to use, IE 5.5. And we really pushed people. Now it's not as big a deal. IE 7, I think, is as good as Firefox.
And most SUVs don't flip over. So, you know, it's your life.
And in related news, Opera 9.5 also available. 3,000 people have downloaded it so far.
Does it really say that?
No.
Oh, jeez, because that would be pretty close to the true number.
You got to be careful because Opera fanatics are like Mac cultists. They will really let you know if you say anything bad about Opera. I keep wanting to like Opera. I keep installing it.
I do, too. I do. I have 9.5, whatever beta the last one was, on my PC, but I just have the same reaction every time. What is the point of this thing?
Yeah,
I will say, on Windows Mobile anyway, when I had that awful two-month period there where I was testing the Celia Redfly, which was a fantastic device, but I had to use Windows Mobile, Opera makes a nice mobile browser.
Right.
They really do, and the only problem with it is you have to buy it. You know, the nice one.
There is, I have to point out, I think this is really important that people know this, that the Opera Mini, which is, I agree, a great browser, proxies and caches every page you go to. So it breaks SSL.
Oh, jeez.
So if you're surfing to a secure page, now I'm quoting Steve Gibson here, but if you're searching to a secure page, you're essentially surfing through Opera Mini and they can see your passwords. They can see, you're trusting Opera with your bank account and all that stuff.
Yeah. I guess it would depend on your usage. I think of the mobile web in a very strictly subset terms.
Yeah. Don't buy stuff. Don't use a credit card. If you're going to use Opera Mini.
Oh, it's a lot of mobile websites, news headlines, blogs, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm not going to be,
it's a good mini browser as long as you understand what the limits are. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I'm a Firefox user. I got Firefox right here. Hey, speaking of, does Silverlight work in Firefox?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
In fact, it's just on there today.
So I can go to the new Olympics site, which is up.
Yeah, I sent you the URL for that. We had talked about this, I think, back right after the Mix show.
Right.
That might have been early March, I think.
Right.
And Dimitri from Microsoft sent me a link where you can go and see this site, and sure enough, you know, you waste a bunch of time there. I think what's cool about it is you can watch, obviously, Olympic video, but you can also do some picture-in-picture stuff. So, when the Olympics are happening, there are going to be different events occurring live at the same time. And this is going to allow you to click back and forth between them from a dedicated pop-up window, you know, between a big screen and a small screen, just like picture-in-picture works on a TV set.
So, I'm doing it now. I'm on a Mac, so I need to install Silverlight 2, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's out.
It works really well.
I'm going to try it here. So what's different than just having... Because Silverlight 1 was really just a Flash competitor.
Yeah. So, the way they're using it on the Olympic site is obviously mostly for video. Okay. And when you go there today, what you're seeing is not live video, but video probably from the last Olympics or whatever. During the Olympics, you're going to be able to have several screens all going at the same time with live sporting events.
Oh, neat.
And yeah,
so that's where the picture in picture makes sense. I was thinking, what do I care about picture in picture watching canned video? But
you care about it when it's on live.
Yes. So I can watch, I have a swim meet in one window and have a track meet in another window.
Yes.
So, that's something you can't do I guess you could do in Flash. Is there anything on here that is unique to Silverlight?
No, I think the thing that's unique to Silverlight is something that matters more to NBC than it does to a user. It's just the scale and the possibilities of the back end. I mean, you know, obviously, this is going to be watched by, you know, millions and millions of people, and they needed something that would, you know, stay up and work. And it's really interesting that they went with something that isn't finalized, although I guess it will be by the time the Olympics hit. Right. They took a bet on this. So this will be something, you know, when the Olympics is happening, you'll have to come, we'll have to go and look at this at the time. The demo they did at Mix was just fantastic. Oh, and now I can hear myself in the background.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I relaunched Firefox and it pulled me to a site where we were talking. Just ignore that. I had to relaunch.
As would often happen.
Oh, you know, every page of mine has video of you on it.
Neat.
Neat.
Creepy, but neat.
Neat. That's really neat. That's a Bill Gatesism. That's really neat.
That's really neat.
It's really neat. You're going to love this. I had a relaunch because I want to see this NBC thing. I'm very interested in this. I installed Silverlight. Didn't have to restart the machine. Just had to restart.
Browser.
It's NBCOlympics.com/video. And now that I have Silverlight, I'll switch over. Well, let's play with it a little bit. This is kind of cool. I mean, it's pretty looking.
Yeah.
Maria Mutolo's magic moment. But I don't at this point see anything much different than Flash. So that's what's going to be interesting is when it does something different.
Okay.
And at some point, maybe it will. It looks, well, I mean, right now, it's like, I can't, it's no different. At least
sometime while we're sitting here waiting for that.
Well, I'm watching a video. It's very exciting. It's compelling. It's somebody running down a track. It's very, very neat.
I think what's cool about it is try to get, you know, when you get picture in picture going, you know, look at the way you can kind of jump back and forth between them.
Right.
That works now. You can do that. And I don't know. I think this is nicely presented, you know.
So how do I do picture in picture?
There is a, let's see if I can figure this out.
Explore videos, highlights as seen on TV, most what, I'm just, you know, I'm playing.
Yeah, so, all right, so the first thing to do is, in the bottom right corner of the video screen, there's a shaded button next to share.
Yeah.
And you can click that to bring up sort of a more dedicated, you know, video screen.
Right.
On the left, there are these five circles that you can mouse over.
Yeah.
You can go to like most watched or whatever. And the choices now, when you click on these videos, are between watch and PIP. So you can choose picture in picture to get that to come up.
Oh, that's neat. Now, they say this video control room feature is coming soon, but that lets you watch four videos at the same time. That's
what's good during the Olympics.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I like that idea a lot.
Now,
I mean, who's going to watch TV? The problem with TV, especially these Olympics are in China, it's the time zone is again completely screwed up. It's not going to be live on TV. So, but if you want to get up at 3 a.m. and watch, you know, the triathlon, you can watch it.
Yep.
I like that. And it's going to kill the TV viewership, I think.
Yeah. Well, you can also go back and watch whatever you want when you want to watch it, which is also the other cool thing. And the quality is high enough that it looks decent, you know.
No, it looks very good. I'm impressed. DTO1 is saying, but does it run on a Mac? Yes, it does. Silverlight 2 is available on the Mac as well as on Windows. So. I like it.
Yeah, it works in Firefox. It's nice.
Let's take a break. Coming up in just a bit, Paul's tip of the week, his software of the week. And I have a software pick, too, something we discovered last night on Twit Live that I'm really digging. I might even get you to start using it too, Paul.
Alrighty.
But first, let's mention our good friends at audible.com. They sponsor this show and most of the Twit Network now 1 year in on our sponsorship, and it has been a relationship made in heaven. Why? Because before there were podcasts, I listened to audiobooks nonstop, and you know, I still do. I love audiobooks. I have been an Audible member. Audible's been around 10 years. I've been a member, I think, 8. And was listening to books on tape before that. There's just something about reading a book by listening to it for me. And I think for you too, Paul, it just kind of, it's a better experience. It's a more entertaining experience. I think you comprehend more, at least I do. And boy, it sure is a lifesaver on those times when you're stuck in the car, on a commute, in an airplane, in the gym, where you can't read something, but you would like some entertainment to take your mind off the fact that you've been in the middle seat for 4 hours and the plane is still on the tarmac. Audiobooks from audible.com, to be specific. We have a special URL. You can join Audible right now if you're not already a member and get a free book. It's audible.com/windows. audible.com/windows. And when you go there and you subscribe, you will get a credit towards a free book. And I think you've got a great pick this week, Paul.
Yeah, I looked around a bit. I saw that the Foundation series was available on the Kindle, and That'd be interesting.
Love
so I looked
that.
Around Audible, and they do have Foundation, by the way, the original Foundation.
They do. Oh, that's neat.
They do, but I didn't recommend it because the it's sort of one of those acted out with music.
Is it the same text or is it kind of dramatized?
It's semi-dramatized. Oh. Yeah.
I don't mind the drama. I like, you know, Dune, they do a great job with Dune with the original text. Yeah.
No, so actually, some of the dramatized ones are fine. But if you listen to Foundation, I didn't think that was all that great. So rather than discuss the one I didn't pick, I guess I should move along to the one I did, which is iRobot.
Now, the sad thing is a lot of people are thinking now Will Smith.
Sure.
No.
By the way, the movie was okay, you know, as an action sci-fi movie. But right. As one reviewer noted, you know, the only thing the movie has in common with the book is its title. You know,
yes.
There's really nothing going on there. So don't be put off by that and think that's what iRobot is all about. But we talked about Anne McCaffrey and the Dragon Riders of Pern and that kind of stuff. Right. The Foundation stuff, the Robot series, also books I read. First in high school, these are stories that hold up over time. They're fantastic.
Absolute classics.
And if you really like this stuff, the beautiful thing is over time, Asimov brought these two things together. They occur in the same universe.
Oh, interesting.
That he created. And there's lots of short stories that take place in the Foundation / Robot series, you know, universe. And it's just, is an amazingly rich tapestry of this stuff. So if you enjoy iRobot or any of the other Asimov robot books or Foundation, these things all actually tie in together. And it's really kind of a neat thing if you, you know, get all the way through it.
This is Scott Brick reading this. By the way, I noticed when I went to it, there are two versions of iRobot, one unabridged regular version and one for learners of English.
Hopefully that's not the one I was listening
to. No, but that's interesting. And actually, I know a lot of people listening around the world who perhaps one of the reasons people listen to our shows is because it's a good way to learn English. That might be something for them to look at. I know they're learning Paul Theroux.
I'm so sorry.
It's wicked good. It's wicked.
We're going to have people going around talking English like this. Yeah.
Okay. Hi, my name is Buzz Killington.
Yeah. So let me play. This is Scott Brick, who is, I think, one of Audible's best readers. I just love Scott's stuff. He does a lot of sci-fi. And this is a little from iRobot. And just to underscore this, iRobot is not a novel. It's a series of short stories.
Surely they've told you I'm not human. They had, but there was no point in saying so. She got up from her chair. She wasn't tall, and she looked frail. I followed her to the window, and we looked out. The offices and factories of U.S. robots were a small city, spaced and planned. It was flattened out like an aerial photograph.
I'm going to get this just because I love Scott Brick so much. He, when I hear his voice, I remember, you know, perhaps a half dozen books that I totally loved that he read. It's funny how you get attached to the reader as much as you get attached to the book.
Sure.
Yeah. He is so good.
Some of the readers are just classic.
Well, in fact, one of the things you can do when you're at Audible is not only can you click on the author, you can click on the reader. So if you like a reader, you can actually find other books that they've read. Scott reads a lot of the sci-fi and the thriller stuff, and I just really like his stuff. Anyway, audible.com. It is your new online bookstore, and I want you to join it right now. If you're not already a member, by going to audible.com/windows. And when you do, sign up. You get a credit towards a free book. And I think this Isaac Asimov iRobot series is just a really good way to start. They have really just completely upgraded their sci-fi stuff. Now they have a very, very good sci-fi collection. Somebody's asking in the StickAm chat room if Patrick Stewart does any books on Audible. I think he does. He's the guy you'd want to hear, isn't he?
I would even listen to Shakespeare.
Well, he's famous for being a Shakespearean actor.
Yeah, that might make me want to even listen to that.
Yeah. You don't like Shakespeare?
Well, no. What I always think of is Kenneth Branagh did that epic version of, I think it was Hamlet, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
And it was in the original, you know, the original language. And for the first 15 minutes, of course, you're trying to figure out what the heck is going on. But then what happens over time
you start to understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. You actually get into the vibe of the language. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I see Patrick Stewart's actually on quite a few Audible books. A Christmas Carol, The Chronicles of Narnia. He's in some Doctor Who stuff. I don't think there's anyone that he reads the whole book, but I see he's in a lot of them. really love, I mean, sure. After a year now, you know, we love audiobooks, and there is no better way, no easier way, no simpler way to buy and listen to audiobooks. And by the way, you don't rent them, you own them. And I love that too. Audible.com, audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Now it's time for you, Mr. Thurrott, to earn your keep. That's what people tune in for. They tune in for the Windows Vista tips.
Wow.
Don't you think?
Yeah, they might. I don't know.
I do. I don't listen to the whole show right up to the end. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm teasing. No, the truth is, I am a fan of tips. I don't know why. And I just love collecting them. Is there, you know, on the Mac, there's a wonderful site, macOS10hints.com, I think. Yeah. Is there a Windows tip site, a Vista tip site you recommend? Do you know of one? Does anybody know
one? Really, I bet there are some out there.
Used to be Windows Annoyances was such a great site. Remember that?
Yeah. I find those books annoying, Leo. No,
you don't like tip books?
No.
I'm thinking tip sites, though, more than tip books.
I have to admit, I don't, you know, obviously I'm not looking around for tips. I mean,
you know everything. You don't need a tip.
No, I don't. No. I don't know everything. I don't know. I don't know.
It's, you know, you're a pro. This is your bread and butter. Tips are more for people like me who are more, you know, users and fans. And we feel like I'll tell you where this comes from. We mere mortals look at people like you and think there's some magical command that I'm missing here.
And what it is ignoring your family so you can learn how your computer works. I can't say that I recommend doing that. I look at it this way. Unfortunately, you know, one of the hard things, I think I do this pretty well in the review side. I think when it comes to this sort of tips, you know, /usage type thing, I'm not as good about it, which is I try to put myself in the position of people using the system when I review something and say, you know, does this make sense for people? Not just for me, you know, but for people. Tips are a little harder because I have my set way of working. And in some cases, I'm sure I don't do things the same way that other people will do them. So, you know, today's tip, for example, is a suggestion from a reader, Andrew, which is appreciated.
Thank you. A tip of the hat to our tipper.
Yes. And it's one of those things I knew about it. It's in my book somewhere, you know, but I don't know that it would have occurred to me, but I saw this and I thought, yes, this is a good tip. And this is something I think people could use. And it's a quickie. It's basically about changing the behavior of the power button that appears in the Windows Vista start menu. The power button. So if you open the start menu, there are those two big buttons.
Oh, yeah.
Right corner.
It's the circle with the little thing line.
Yeah,
the
power icon. You know, there's a lock icon, and then there's a pop-up menu, a little triangle. You pop it up, and that actually gives you all of the options that are available on that computer. Right. And what this reminded me of was one of the very last conversations I had with Jim Alchin, who was the guy in charge of the development of Windows Vista, and he retired after Windows Vista shipped, was about why they had changed the behavior of turning off the computer through the start menu. Because one of the things I really liked about Windows XP at the time was you could just hit the start button, hit U, and then the shutdown menu would pop up, and then you could hit a letter to do what you wanted to do.
Oh.
So if you want to shut down, you could hit U. If you wanted to reboot, you could hit R. If you wanted to go into standby, you could hit S. And then it was a hidden feature. If you wanted to go into hibernation, if it was assuming it was enabled, even though it didn't appear in the window, you could hit H, go into hibernation.
So these are just keystrokes. So you could do this very quickly by just hitting the Windows key
in XP.
Yeah,
right.
UH or whatever.
Right. Now in Vista, it's changed completely. So one of the things if I want to do something non-standard in Vista, this isn't actually the tip. This is just off the top of my head. Because of the way XP worked, I think of shutting down sort of via the keyboard. This is the way my mind works. So you can actually hit the start button, arrow right 3 times, and then you're in the menu. And the first menu, the selected choice is usually shut down on a desktop computer. I'm not sure if it's different on a laptop, but you can then move up and down through that menu to choose the other options or hit the letter like you could in XP. So, for example, you could hit start, right, R.
Right.
That would restart the computer. So it's sort of like XP, you know. But
instead of the kind of mnemonic characters, you have to hit this right thing.
Yeah, it's a little different, a little more ponderous, I think. But, you know, maybe you don't want to make it too easy to turn off the computer by mistake.
Which so I was about, by the way, I tried yeah, this, and I almost it right, did it, yeah.
As the podcast comes grunting to a halt, it's turned up.
So you hit right, and it opens up this power menu. So we got a better way.
But yeah, so this is, I think, a way that applies to more people. In other words, this is not something I would ever personally change because I never, ever click on this button because, frankly, I don't know what it does, right?
There's a power button. Okay.
Yeah, what is this thing? You know, and as it turns out, it can be configured differently. I could be wrong, but it wouldn't surprise me to discover that this thing is actually configured differently on desktops and laptops, for example.
I think I just shut down my machine. I shouldn't have done that.
Sorry. It's hard not to.
I clicked the power button. It turned the whole thing off.
It amazingly, it actually does something related to powering up the machine.
Oh, no. Paul.
Sorry.
Fortunately, I have a backup recording. That was a machine making the recording.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. Wow. Dumb me. Okay. I thought it was going to give me a menu or something. So what you're saying is you can change that behavior.
You can change the behavior. And the way you do it is through the control panel. In the document I sent you, I actually sent you a sort of a long way to get into this. But you can actually...
We'll put that in the show notes, by the way.
Well, the easier way to do it would be open up Start Menu and type the word power into Start Menu Search. And depending on what you have installed on your system, one of the first options that should come up is Power Options, which is where you want to be.
Right.
And then over on the left, one of the links says choose what the power button does. And then you can just, from a drop-down list, choose between the different behaviors. You can use it to do nothing. You know, in case you are clicking this thing by mistake, you don't want it to do anything. You can choose to go into sleep. You can choose to shut down. So you can just change the options. On my machine, it's actually set to go into standby. Yeah. By default, not shut down. I'm not sure why, but...
I'm thinking that's because that's what happened to mine. I haven't configured this, so I'm thinking that's the default.
Yeah.
Now I can't wake it up. Shouldn't I be able to just click the mouse or the...
Listen, there's all kinds of things you should be able to do. But what are you asking me?
Nothing. It's okay. I got a backup recording, I hope. Well, no, we have a recording right up to the point where I pressed that button anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, so I think I should change that to do nothing. Just based on my, you know,
based on your
experience record
right now.
Yeah.
Actually, it off. Yeah. It is an enticing button. It's glowing. You know, it is calling out to you.
But it is an on off button. So I should know that it's
good. It is. Well, but you're saying it actually didn't say, are you sure?
No.
It just went
immediately
right
when the screen's dark.
Wow.
It's not coming.
You should sign the XP petition because that would never happen in XP.
That wouldn't happen in XP. Oh man, live and learn. No, yeah, this is a stock Vista. It's a Service Pack 1, but I haven't done anything, you know, much to it because it's supposed to be a clean machine that just runs the Adobe Audition software that records our show. And whoops, I should know better than to play along with Paul.
That's funny, though.
It's pretty funny, isn't it? I didn't know it would do that. Because you expect it to give you some sort of little feedback there.
You would, yes.
Yeah. So I have to go around now and turn on my machine.
To ask.
That's all right. Like, that's good. So I can change it, though. Control panel, power options, edit the plan settings, under power buttons and lid. Does it not say lid if you don't have a laptop? Maybe they're smart enough to know it doesn't say
just
lid.
Just boot it up, but I will look.
Start menu power. And then you could configure the behavior. Don't mess with it, Paul. Paul?
I launched PowerShell by mistake. All right, so it says... I'm sorry?
Do you use PowerShell?
No, not frequently.
Okay.
No. Doesn't everybody, Leo?
Oh, sure. Makes me happier than writing batch files.
I really enjoy scripting WMI, so it's something I just do in my copious amounts of spare time.
Oh, God. Software of the week, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, sir. This is called Orb.
Orb. Oh, I love Orb. We're on Orb.
Okay. So also a recommendation from Frank Van Dellen. I'd never heard of this. This looks great. I mean, it's it's pretty impressive. It's a it's basically a way to share or access your photos, music, videos,
yep,
and other content from your PC, basically anywhere in the world, depending on what sort of device or connection you have. You know, it works from mobile phones, PDAs, laptops. It works over the web. The remote access over the web is actually particularly impressive. I thought you can really customize the site. It will bring up random playlists of music and does a photo slideshow right in the browser. And if you have all your stuff on this one PC, you want to access it, whether in the house even or from elsewhere. I mean, I'm interested in trying this when we're away to see how this works, you know, from across the country or to Europe or whatever.
It works really well. It even works on the iPhone now. Well, you have to hack your iPhone, but it works on the iPhone.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah, I looked at that. I actually downloaded the, you know, the jailbreak application that they recommend. And I thought, what am I doing? You know,
I've done that many times where you get this close to jailbreaking and then you go,
yes,
wait a minute.
What am I doing?
What am I nuts? Yeah. How much do I want to watch TV on my iPhone?
Exactly.
But it is. It's a very cool. No, and it's free.
It's free. I know. It's neat.
ORB.com.
Yep. It's a neat application. I can't believe I've never heard of it.
You know, deserves more attention. I've known about it for some time. I've actually corresponded with them when the iPhone thing came out. And I just think it's a great product. But I think because it's, believe it or not, I think because it's free, it doesn't have the attention that it would be if this were a commercial. If this were a commercial product, I think more people would know about it. Isn't that odd?
Yeah, it's really below the radar for whatever reason.
Now, of course, everybody who's known about this for years is going, "You guys are nitwits."
Yeah.
But I'm serious. It is not as well known as it ought to be. More people ought to know about this, and I'm glad you're telling people about it because it's really cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, you get a recommendation like that, and you think, okay, well, this is going to be some hokey piece of junk because I've never heard of this,
right?
And you know, you kind of look at it and think, oh, this is actually pretty impressive.
This ain't bad at all.
No.
All right. I've got a recommendation. It's kind of the same. You know, we use Skype for all of our shows, and Skype has been a boon to us. It's absolutely free, and it's just fantastic. And despite the fact that your video has been frozen for the last hour,
has it really?
It's not
you should have said something.
It's not Skype's fault. It's just, you know.
I actually think it is Skype's fault, but to go on, I'm sorry.
Well, I don't know. That Xbox Live camera is not what top of the line.
I will be here next week with a more impressive camera.
But I want to talk about Uvu. Uvu. In fact, what I want you to do next week is not use Skype, but go to Uvu. OOVOO. Now, .com. Now, here's the negative. There's a paid version and the free version. I kind of like it that there's a paid version. The free version is a video conferencing program, allows you to make calls just like Skype does. Really good video and the ability to have multiple cameras at multiple people, up to three people in the free version, six people in the paid version. And we tried it last night with six people in it, and it was spectacular.
Wow.
I was very impressed with it.
It's the fact that this looks exactly like an iChat demo.
But it works. iChat never worked for me. I mean, it worked, but you need so much bandwidth, it never worked reliably. This actually works really well.
Huh.
So, Uvu, I haven't a huge amount of experience with it. I'm going to play with it more. I think we're going to use it on Twit Live for our incoming callers. We'll probably continue to use Skype's done so well for us in the audio side.
Sure.
I don't see a lot of reason to change. But if we're doing a panel conversation where we have more than three people, we can't do video. And that's one of the things Uvu is going to be really great for us because we could actually have, you know, a Twit panel or a MacBreak Weekly panel and see everybody. I think it's kind of cool. Anyway, and it's free to try, and when you get the first 30 days, you get the full super, you know, paid version. But there's always a free version for up to three people. And I'd like next week if you want to try Uvu just for your video, just to see if we
What is this? How much does it cost?
I think it depends. There's different packages. The most expensive is quite expensive. It's $10 a month, but that includes free calling. It's kind of like Skype out.
Right. Right.
It is Windows and Mac. The Windows version is much more complete than the Mac version. The Mac version is early beta, and so you can't, for instance, buy stuff. The additional features aren't available on the Mac. So, but I mean, anyway, just a thought. Just two products that probably half the audience listening has known about for years. But Leo and Paul were just a little slow. Orb.com.
Sitting on the bench.
Hey, try Orb on it. I believe it works very well with Windows Media Center and Xbox Live. Yep. And
true.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
and,
that's nice.
And Uvu, for those who are looking for a video conferencing solution that's maybe a little more capable than Skype. Paul, we've come to the end of this fabulous ride.
It had to happen eventually.
Wait a minute. Now that you've got video back up.
I have video back.
Now you're frozen again.
Oh, no, really?
But here's the good news. You're frozen in a different position. So
okay,
it's,
let me look.
It's almost as if...
It's like the recording thing where it cuts out after 2 minutes, except mine just stops after 10 seconds.
Yeah, and it might be a Skype thing, and it might be that. Who knows what that is? But what I do like is it's kind of just, but think of it this way. It's one frame every 30 minutes. 640 frames a week.
I wanted to stop when I'm doing something like, you know.
There he is. In fact, the last time it stopped, you were exactly doing that.
Was I really?
Your hands were kind of blurry and flying.
Gesticulating wildly. Yeah. That's what I am speaking to an audience that I see only in my head.
Well, the truth is, and I really want to underscore this, that the audio only audience is vast compared to the video audience. The video audience is a few thousand. The audio only audience,
and I would imagine anyone saying this today will make that doubly true.
You know, Paul's so good in audio,
but he's got a face made for podcasts.
No, this show is something like 50,000 to 75,000 per episode, depending on the episode. And we're only talking maybe 2,000 per on the video. But, you know, if we get the video perfected, we could do a video version. And sometimes it's worth seeing the video of what we're talking about. Paul, great to talk to you.
Together.
Yeah. It's good for us. I mean, it's kind of fun for us.
Yeah.
Because after, you know, a year, it's same old, same old. You got to spice up the relationship.
That's right.
So next time I'm going to wear a fox outfit and you can wear a pirate outfit.
Okay.
Won't that?
I'm willing to try anything for you, Leo. And on that creepy note,
Paul Theriot writes for the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. If you're a Windows user, you got to go there. It's the site. What am I asking you? What the big hint site is? That's the big hint site, winsupersite.com. And he was just too self-effacing to say, "What are you talking about, Leo? I run it." He's also news editor for Windows IT Pro, but it's more than that.
I don't really do a tip site, but
there's lots of tips on Win Super Site.
Tips for life.
Tips for living. Absolutely.
Living the Windows dream. That's what I'm all about.
His book, Windows Vista Secrets, is available on Wiley & Sons. And by the way, just to wrap this up, apparently now the announcement is official. Yahoo has said they're done talking to Microsoft.
Really?
Yeah. Now, Yahoo's been saying this for some time. I don't think it's done till Carl Icahn sings, but that's the latest news. And I think it really has more to do with this poison pill. It sounds like a deal with Google is imminent, a deal that might even, this would be a world-changing event and certainly draw the attention of the U.S. Department of Justice and EU regulators. Maybe merge Yahoo Search with Google Search. That would be a shocker. We expect, by the time you've heard this, you will already know. We're not really telling them anything they don't already know.
What else is new?
But we've just found out. Paul Theriot, I'm completely useless.
Why are we even doing this?
Paul, you're the best. Thanks so much. We'll talk again next week on Windows Weekly.